on behalf of Srila Prabhupada, our beloved founder Acharya, and all of the devotees of Sri Radha Gopinath Temple, we offer our sincere gratitude to all of you for so kindly coming today. Our special thanks to the devotees of Mira Road who have performed this very illuminating and dramatic presentation. We can see how through drama and theatrical performances one can illuminate the heart of so many people. So I'm very happy to see this is the perfection of Bollywood. In my opinion. Every morning we have Srimad Bhagavatam class at 8 o'clock at Radha Gopinath Temple. The verse that is designated for tomorrow morning's class, I would like to speak on today, because it is quite pertinent to the very wonderful drama we have just seen. It is from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 30, entitled The Activities of the Prachetas, text number 35. Yatredyam tekatha mrishtas trishnaya prashamo jataha nirvairam yatra bhuteshu nodvigo yatra kashchana. Whenever pure topics of the transcendental world are discussed, the members of the audience forget all kinds of material hankerings, at least for the time being. Not only that, but they are no longer envious of one another, nor do they suffer from anxiety or fear. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Vaikuntha means without anxiety, and the material world means full of anxiety. As stated by Prahlad Maharaj, sadasamudvignadhyam asadgrahat, the living entities who have accepted this material world as a residence are full of anxiety. A place immediately becomes Vaikuntha, the spiritual world, whenever the topics of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are discussed by pure devotees. This is the process of Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu, chanting and hearing about the Supreme Lord Vishnu, as the Supreme Lord Himself confirms. Naham tishtami vaikunte yoginam hridayeshuva tatra tishtami narada yatra gayanti madbhakta. My dear Narada, actually I do not reside in my abode Vaikuntha, nor do I reside within the hearts of yogis, but I do reside in that place where my pure devotees chant my holy name and discuss my form, pastimes, and qualities. Because of the presence of the Lord in the form of the transcendental vibration, the Vaikuntha atmosphere is evoked. This atmosphere is without fear and anxiety. One living entity does not fear another. By hearing the holy names and glories of the Lord, a person executes pious activities. Srinvatam sukatha krishna punya sravana kirtana Thus his material hankerings immediately stop. This Sankirtan movement, started by the Society for Krishna Consciousness, is meant for creating Vaikuntha, the transcendental world that is without anxiety, even in this material world. The method is the propagation of the Shravanam Kirtanam process throughout the world. In the material world, everyone is envious of his fellow man. Animalistic envy exists in human society as long as there is no performance of Sankirtan Yajna, the chanting of the holy names. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. The Prachetas, therefore, decided to remain always in the society of devotees, and they considered that to be the highest benediction possible in human life. What we are reading today is the universal essence of true spirituality. Within this material world, the potential of envy toward another living being is always present. It is just a matter of circumstances evoking that envy. Brothers can become envious of brothers, husband for wife, children to parents, friends to friends, what to speak of various castes, religions, nations. From that envy, so much harm and suffering is inflicted between one living being and another. Krishna tells in Gita, Aham Bija Prata Pita, that I am the seed-giving father and mother of every living entity. We are all children. But here is the Srimad Bhagavatam's explanation of how to transform the material world into the spiritual world. What we saw in this drama was not a system of negation, but rather a system of transformation. People have certain inclinations by their conditionings and by their own constitutional nature. To negate the propensities within us is not satisfying, and it could have no permanence. But to transform, people are mad with kama, the passion to enjoy, to touch something beautiful, to see something beautiful, to taste something beautiful, to smell something beautiful, to hear something beautiful. When the mind is inflicted by this kama or lust, it makes the senses mad. Actually, there's nothing in this world that can make you lusty. It's not that a beautiful man or a beautiful woman or something that tastes delicious or something that here is very sweet, that doesn't make you lusty. Lust is within our heart. That just evokes it. A self-realized soul, let us take Haridas Thakur, Param Drispani Vartate. He was experiencing the nectar of the holy name. He was so totally satisfied with that in and of himself. Then even the most beautiful prostitute and Maya herself presented herself in most amorous ways before Haridas. And there was simply no attraction, no concern. It was like seeing a tree. There's a tree and there's a woman. What's the difference? They're both made out of earth, water, fire, air, ether. That's what I'm seeing. Actually, what do you see? All physical matter that excites our senses is simply various chemical combinations of the five basic elements of earth, water, fire, air, and ether. How can they disturb the soul? But according to our conditionings, different external forces just evoke what's already within us, this passion. A pure-hearted soul, because he's not attracted to the temporary objects of the senses, that person doesn't get angry, because that person's just not frustrated. So how is it that someone can make us angry? The person's not the cause of our anger. The person or the things we want and the people promoting it is not the cause of our greed or our lust or our pride or our envy. The problem is it's in our hearts. And various circumstances just catalyze the awakening of that. Just like many years ago when I was living in a cave in Himalayas, there was some rocks in a circle on the ground of this cave. It was a stone ground. And this yogi, very powerful yogi, he just took a little stick and just rubbed these ashes that were in the center of that circle of rocks. Just rubbed the ashes. And all of a sudden, fire. And I asked him, "Do you have some power to make fire?" He said, "No." He said, "What it is there's burning coals, but they're under the ashes. So when you look at the ashes, it just looks like very cool, nice, fresh ashes. But underneath them are these burning, cindering coals. And if I just rub them a little, it just agitates them and they just blaze into fire." So that's the nature of the mind and the senses. Lust, envy, pride, anger, greed, illusion, they are within our hearts. And how can we blame anyone? The problem is in us. Certain circumstances just evoke the manifestation of those anartas or materialistic qualities. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu tells, Chaito darpana marajanam bhava mahadavagni nirvapanam, that this chanting of the name of the Lord, its purpose is not simply a spiritual form of entertainment. Its purpose is not that we can get nice benedictions and do better in this world because we are closer to God. The real purpose of chanting the holy names is to purify our hearts, to actually cleanse these dirty propensities from within us. And this cleansing process is actually not a process of negation, but a process of transformation. And this was so wonderfully exhibited in today's drama. This devotee, who was being confronted by all of the powerful forces that defeat, plunder, and exploit human society, he didn't tell them to give up their occupation. He just taught them how to use it in Krishna's service. "Oh, you are lusty? So now you're totally mad after the opposite sex, and you're totally mad after just giving pleasure to these five senses. And really, what are the five senses about? They're just holes. I mean, really, there's holes in the body. You know, the holes, two holes for ears and two holes filled up by something in our eyes and two holes for a nose and a big hole for the mouth. And the skin is just so many little holes, pores. It's just about, you know, filling up holes. That's what material life is about, just filling up all these holes and just keeping them. And the more you fill them, the more they're empty. That's the illusion of Maya. In the material world, you have a hole, you fill it. It's filled. All right, no more hole. Mission accomplished. But these holes, the more you feed them, Krishna says it's like putting fuel on fire. It makes it hungrier and hungrier and hungrier. It's an unfillable hole. The only way these holes can be filled is when we fill them with the complete whole. But that's whole. Krishna is the whole because everything is included in Krishna. When we remember Krishna, when we are conscious of Krishna, all our desires become fulfilled. Because he's the strength of the strong, the intelligence of the intelligent. He's the light of the sun and the moon. He's the source of all opulences. Whatever beautiful and wonderful things we see in this entire creation are just insignificant manifestations of a spark of Krishna's splendor. That is Krishna. So yes, these senses, which are nothing but little holes in our body, because the mind is filled with this lust and envy and anger and pride and greed and illusion, when any little trickle of something that can be enjoyed, you see, the mind, when it has lust or envy or greed, it's just always looking for something or someone to just focus on. Yes? Because ultimately, we're lonely. Even these anarthas are lonely. They can't survive by themselves. They want company. They want something to just zero in, just concentrate, just meditate, just contemplate on. Yes? That is material life. Therefore, always anxiety, because you can never get enough. Everything is temporary. And the more you have, the more it's at risk. Yes? The more you have, there's so many people who want to get it from you. People want your position. Like politicians. If you have a big position, so many people are trying to drag you down from that position. You have to work so hard to maintain it. It's like in America now, there is an election coming up for president. And it's the whole nation's talking about it. Somebody has big power. He's in charge of the armed forces. He's in charge of the whole government system. And there's a whole party which is tens and thousands, hundreds and thousands of millions of people want to take it away from him. Yes? So whoever has it, there's going to be millions of people who want to take it away from you. So much fear. So much to defend. If somebody has big money, so many people want to drag you down. And eventually, you're going to be dragged down, whoever you are. It's the nature of the world. If not by other people or circumstances, by death itself. So what to do with these inclinations that are within our heart? We transform them by learning the true art of living in a spirit of servitude toward God. To be greedy. Some people are greedy for money. Some people are greedy for food. Some people are greedy for fame and reputation. We're greedy. Lobha. We're eager. We're intensely eager to hear about Krishna. to give Krishna to others, to see the beautiful form of Krishna, to chant the names of Krishna. Transformation. We want to be attracted by Krishna. And we want to be proud of Krishna and the great personalities who represent Krishna. So this is the special message of Bhagavad Gita. Arjuna, you are a family man and you are a warrior. No need to give it up. You're talking about renouncing everything, saying that that's the real spiritual path. It is Yukta Vairagya that is the real path. We have to learn that true renunciation is learning how to use all of our propensities and all of what we have for the purifying, beneficial purpose of servitude to God. When there is love of God within the heart, it manifests toward the devotees as intimate, loving friendship. And when that love of God manifests toward the ordinary people of the world who are an illusion, it manifests as compassion. This is the symptom of love. Intimate friendship toward the devotees and intimate compassion toward those who are infected by Kali. Hate the sin, but never hate the sinner. Hate the disease, but feel compassion and want to help the person that's diseased. So in today's world, in the name of God, there's hatred, there's violence, there's envy, there's judgmentalism. God is not present there. We can say anything we want. We could give any titles to our own dirty hearts. But the fact is, in Bible it says you can judge a tree by its fruit. If there's actually faith and devotion to God within our hearts to the degree that there is, we will be instruments of love. We will try to see the opportunity and the hope in others. There can be no hatred. There can be no envy toward anyone. Compassion. Without the development of compassion toward all living beings, so-called religious consciousness is empty and superficial. Like the rice husk with no rice inside. The rice husk looks like rice, but if there's no rice inside of it, it's just an empty shell, no substance. So it's to develop this substance that Bhagavad Gita is about. To purify and transform our activities, our inclinations and desires, through utilizing them in the loving service of the Lord. But in order to do so, there must be the establishment of that inspiration. The verse previous to this, Tulayama Lavenati Naswargam Napunarbhavam Bhagavat Sangi Sangasya Martyanam Kim Utashisha. Even a moment's association with a pure devotee cannot be compared to being transferred to heavenly planets or even merging into the Brahman effulgence in complete liberation. For living entities who are destined to give up the body and die, association of pure devotees is the highest benediction. Because in the association of devotees, we come together to actually purify our hearts and counteract the propensities within us that have been dragging us down birth after birth after birth. Today's verse, how to become free from envy and suffering? By learning how to take pleasure, to hear and chant the glories of the Lord in the association of devotees who are either pure in heart or who are genuinely and sincerely aspiring to purify their hearts. Prabhupada says there's two types of pure devotees. One who has attained that transcendental state of ecstatic loving service to the Lord. And the other is a person who is still conditioned like us, but they have made a firm determination and commitment in life to purify their hearts and honestly practice the activities to cultivate that purification. Because their mind is fixed on the goal and their activities are honest, therefore, it's just a matter of time till they're transcendental. So they are also categorized as pure devotees. To hear and chant the glories of the Lord in such an association awakens not the lust and the envy and the anger and the pride and the greed that the propaganda of materialistic life invokes. It evokes our love, our humility, our compassion, and our devotion. When we center around a common focus, then we live in harmony. People want peace and harmony in the world. Now, one way of trying to achieve that is by making various stopgap, band-aid type treaties and proposals to somehow or other stop the violence. Yes? That has to be done. But the heart is longing for something more than that. Just 2 days ago at the London airport, someone was showing me some photographs of their marriage. Yes? And the first photograph, the bridegroom was riding on a horse. And this horse was so ornamented with decorations. He had these blinders that were silk with all decorations, and he had garlands and necklaces, and he was really decorated. More than the bridegroom. So I honestly asked, I said, who's getting married? You or the horse? And I'm looking through the photos, and then there's another photo where the husband and the wife, in all their decorated turbans and saris and everything, they were sitting together and signed. They were together with a pen in their hand, and they were signing something. What they were doing is signing their legal marriage. But it looked like a classic picture. There's a book in front of them. And they both have pen. They're sharing a pen in their hand to sign. I said, "You're not even married yet, and you're already trying to sign a peace treaty?" Anyways, where was I? Yes. So real peace is not just stopping the anger and the envy and the violence. Beyond that, what the soul is longing for, what the soul is searching for, is love. Because factually, when you're sound asleep, you're peaceful, aren't you? Actually, sound sleep is becoming a very rare virtue.
in this age of Kali.
People have to spend a lot of money on sleeping pills and various types of other medications just to go to sleep. Yes? Devotees, you know, just Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. We have seen, we give class and devotees are very peaceful. But because there's so many anxieties and so many expectations and so many fears, the mind is just can't be peaceful and go to sleep. And this is considered something very wonderful, to have sound sleep. Really, sometimes when people... Did you have sound sleep last night? Yes, yes. Oh, very good, very good. Congratulations. It's becoming rare. And as Kali Yuga progresses, having sound sleep is going to be very rare. But is that peace? In one sense it is, because you forget all your troubles, you forget all your worries, your anxieties, your expectations, your unfulfilled expectations. What the soul is looking for is love. It's prema. And love is dynamic. It's not static. It's dynamic. In fact, it's an all-devouring experience. Its satisfaction is in its dynamic expression. If you love someone, if a man loves a woman and a woman loves a man, they're not satisfied just sitting across the rooms going like this, oh my beloved, oh my beloved, oh my beloved. They want to interact. They want to express their love. I want to give you this. I want to do that for you. Service. Love is expressed through selfless service for the happiness of the object of our love. So the love of God is the only experience that can satisfy the heart. Anandam buddhivaradanam pratipatam punamritasvadanam. And the attempt to express that love of God in unity with others is what creates real peace and love on earth. Prabhupada gave example. If you throw stones in different parts of a pond, each one creates circles from its own center and they collide with one another. But if you have thrown every stone in the same place, then all those stones will come out and create beautiful, beautiful circles in harmony with one another. There'll be no conflict or collision. When there is a common center, there is harmony. Now, what is the world we live in? Everyone has uncommon centers. Each of us have our own false ego. Janasya moho yamaham ameti. I am the enjoyer. I am the proprietor. That's the center of my life. And then mine, my family, my caste, my society, my religion, my occupation, my company, my political party. So many my's is in the center. And why does that my have so much importance to it? Because the I, the ego, identifies with it so seriously. But then, someone with another ego is potentially a competitor. What is the population of the world today? 6 billion. So that means India is over 1/6 of the planet. Congratulations. 6 billion people on this little planet called Earth. Yes? And that's humans. How many other species are there? She doesn't know. So billions and billions of human beings, and if each one is thinking, I am the enjoyer, I am the center, and what's mine is the center, how much conflict is there going to be? So here's the solution. Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva. Inconceivable unit and spontaneous, simultaneous unity in diversity. This is the teaching of Lord Chaitanya that can actually harmonize all conflict and create solutions, real solutions to the problems within and without. Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva. That everything within this world is simultaneously unity and diversity. How to find unity in diversity and how to find diversity in unity. That's the real meditation that will create harmony. Because the fact is, no one thinks alike. No one is alike. We're all unique individuals. Yes? Recently, I was in London. And while I was there, India was playing Pakistan in Amsterdam. I don't know why they were in Amsterdam, but they were playing in Amsterdam. And Pakistan won the cricket match. And some Indian people I was with were very disturbed. But this British person said, "Doesn't make any difference to me." So what's the difference? Why the British person wasn't disturbed? Pakistani people were celebrating. And Indian people were, I don't know, maybe they were fasting and mourning. But the same incident, but everybody's thinking different. And in America, if I were to call my father and said, "Father, I have news for you." "Yes, son." "Pakistan beat India in cricket." My father would say, "What? You mean in India and Pakistan, they play with crickets?" So what do you go to these countries? That's what they do? Their national sport is playing with little insects? Because the fact is, in America, no one has ever heard of cricket. Until I came to India, I never heard of cricket. Baseball, football, basketball, volleyball, so many balls. Human creativity can find so many ways to enjoy with a ball. You hit it with bats, you catch it with mitts, you throw it through hoops, you kick it with your feet. Football in America means you throw it and whoever has the ball, everyone jumps on and drags them to the ground. Ready? So cricket? What is this cricket? So how relative the world is. In this life you're born, and according to your conditioning and according to your particular type of ego, you're just affected by the world according to the relative experiences that you have. So we see, when I grew up in the West, there was the civil rights movement of Dr. Martin Luther King. I even marched with his people for the trying to get equal rights for the Afro-American people, people with black complexions, because they were so persecuted. If you were black, you're not allowed in the South. Many states in the South of America at that time, if you had just born with a different color, you had to use a different bathroom, you couldn't drink from the same drinking fountain, you weren't allowed to go to the same schools, you had to sit in the back of the bus, you didn't have education possibilities. You were just low class, persecuted because of the color of your skin. Huh? So many of us were marching, equal rights, and the same people who are persecuting someone because of the color of their skin, they're condemning India because they have a caste system. So do you. You don't call it that. But the fact is there's diversity. There's always a conflict between generations. There's always a conflict between races, between religions, between educational brackets, economic brackets. There's the labor unions against the established owners of corporations. Always conflict. To try to make everyone one is an impossible, unrealistic, sentimental ideal, because we're not one. We're different. We have different... Everyone is a different body, a different mind, a different soul, different desires. Yes? So that's diversity. And God has made it that way because it's wonderful. But instead of diversity creating conflict, diversity is meant to create something very, very sweet and beautiful for everyone's satisfaction. And how is that? When we harmonize our aspiration. When we realize that eternally we are all spirit souls. We're all children of God. And we come, no matter how many differences we have, we dovetail all of those differences for the purpose of serving with humility, enlivening and enriching. Much chitta madgata prana bodhyanta parasparam katiyantaschamam nityam tushyanti charamanticha. Devotees find great satisfaction and bliss enlightening one another in conversing and singing the glories of the Lord as brothers and sisters. Today we have people from all different castes in India. Today we have people who are Brahmins, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, or Shudras. We have people who are men and women. Some are wealthy multimillionaires. Some are very, very poor and simple people. Some are IIT graduates. And some are just simple workers. They have no education. We have men and we have women. We have people from America. We have people from Jewish backgrounds, Christian backgrounds, Hindu backgrounds, Muslim backgrounds. We have people from Africa. People from all over the world with all different cultures, all different designations. But we're all happy together. We're all a family. We're all trying to help each other. Why? Because we have a common center. And what is that center? To please Krishna. Krishna is Bhakta Vatsal. Bhakta Vatsal means Krishna is very affectionately disposed to his devotees. Now, how does spiritual purification and love of God awaken in our hearts? Maya, or the illusory energy, is so powerful. She just has a grip on all of us. How can we escape that grip? We have no power to do it. Just like however big or great you may think you are, even wealthy people in America recently, some personality, very, very wealthy, multi-millions of dollars, big corporations, so much fame, but the government just found guilty and puts in jail. What are you supposed to do? With all your money and all your power and all your fame and all your followers, you're in jail. Because the government is a higher power than individuals. Yes? Well, what is Maya? In this material world, Maya is like Krishna's government in this material world. And we're in, Durga means prison. We're imprisoned by Maya Devi. Can any of us get out on our own? Can we somehow or other just cause this love of God to awaken in our heart? Because until it does, we'll be victims of lust and envy and anger and pride and greed and illusion. Unless we experience the higher taste, we are slaves of these lower modes. So we have no power to awaken that love within us. Only Krishna has that power. He is Bhaktavatsala. When we please Krishna, when we earnestly, honestly aspire to please God, then He shows His affection upon His devotee. Yeya tam mam prapadyante tam stathaiva bhajamyaham mama vartmano vartante manushya parata sarvasya. Please listen carefully. According to the Acharyas, this is actually how bhakti works. When we please Krishna, in proportion to the sincerity of our purpose, in proportion to the sincerity of our desire, Krishna is pleased. Krishna accepts the purpose in which everything is offered to Him. He doesn't need anything from anyone because He's the proprietor of everything. He's Atmaram. But He's pleased with our intention, our purpose, our earnest, honest, humble attempt is what pleases Krishna. So when a devotee, samsidhir hari toshanam, makes this priority to please Krishna, then Krishna naturally becomes affectionate toward that devotee. That affection of God awakens love within our heart. That is why Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasati Thakura would say, do not try to see Krishna. Because what will you see? With these eyes made out of flesh and water and all these other material ingredients and the mind which is so much under the grips of illusion, what will you see? No doubt it is a very pious religious activity to come and see the deity. But if we're actually seeing Krishna, we'll be in ecstasy when we see the deity. We'll be overwhelmed. Our heart will be overflooding with devotion when we see Krishna. Are we experiencing that? We're thinking, oh, nice necklace Krishna has on today. And I like the way his dhoti is tied. Very good. Very nice, very nice. So that's good. We're appreciating Krishna. But why? Why we're not really seeing God? Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati said, don't try to see Krishna. Try to serve Krishna in such a way that He is affectionate toward you. It is through this service attitude, through this spirit of humility and devotion, through the honest endeavor to cleanse our heart, that Krishna is pleased. Bhaktivatsal. And when He's affectionate toward us, that affection just melts away all anartas and just opens up the lotus of our heart and our love soars. Our love opens and expresses itself in the form of ecstasy. And what pleases Krishna? The Prachetas that we're reading about today, they are seeing God and offering prayers of pure love for God. And these prayers have been honored, worshipped by great personalities since the time they were spoken long, long ago. Why? Krishna, Lord Vishnu, when He first appears to the Prachetas, He says, I am very pleased with all of you because of your loving friendship with one another centered around serving Me. Therefore, I have come to enlighten your hearts. Krishna is pleased when we are the servant of the servant of His servants. That's the highest benediction. When we ask Krishna for something very great, are we actually asking in the proper attitude? The great souls taught us by their prayers that they feel themselves unfit to ask Krishna even to go back to Godhead. They just ask Krishna, let me just be the servant of the servant of your servants, birth after birth after birth. I don't even deserve that. It's too high for me. But I'm asking. That's my aspiration. That spirit of servant of the servant of the servant is a selfless servant, an expression of giving toward others for the pleasure of God. When Krishna sees that amongst the devotees, he is immensely pleased. Prabhupada said, you can show your love for me by how you cooperate with one another. So if we're chanting 64 rounds a day and we're fasting on Ekadasis and we're performing and we're very staunch celibate renunciates, but we're fighting with people and criticizing with other devotees and we're blaspheming and we're all kinds of gossip coming out of our mouth, we're not pleasing Krishna. Servant of the servant. The purpose of chanting the names of the Lord, the purpose of hearing the glories of the Lord is to please the Lord. So we have to do it in such a way that's pleasing. Yes? If you come to your mother on birthday and say, Mother, I know you like champak flowers. So I have brought you a champak flower. Yes? Please accept it. It's my love. Oh, she will be very pleased with that. But what if you say, huh, I know you love champak flowers. Now, I have a lot to do today, and you know, here's a champak flower. I don't know why you're the way you are, but here's a champak flower. Does that please her? You're giving her what she likes, but you're not giving it the way she likes it. Krishna likes when we chant the holy names. But if we're not chanting properly, if we're not chanting in proper disposition, if we're cruel or offensive or egoistic, Krishna's not pleased with our chanting. Therefore, spirituality is based on philosophy and development of character. It is all important. Golokera premadana harinam sankirtana. That the holy name of Krishna has descended from the spiritual world. It is the eternal activity of all the residents of the spiritual world. To be united with love and service toward one another for the pleasure of Radha and Gopinath through the chanting of the holy names. So here we find beautiful verse that when my devotees, Krishna explains, when they come together to hear and chant the glories of the Lord with one another, then envy between them does not exist for the time being. That's what it says. That means as long as we're doing it. So we should keep the time being always. Because as soon as we take Krishna out of the center, the center again comes to my false ego. Like that. So to keep Krishna in the center, we come to the temple to associate with such diverse people. And it's wonderful how we can all be united with love and respect because God is in the center. Service is in the center. And we take that experience, that enlightened inspiration, and we bring it to our homes with us and try to recreate it wherever we go. That is the purpose of these temples. Not just for superstitious rituals. I'm not going to mention names, but I was speaking to someone who was the president of a particular Hindu temple in America. This is just a couple months ago. And This man is a PhD professor at a major college in America. Would you like to hear this story?
No.
It's getting late though. So he was telling me about the activities of his temple. And he said, you know, they have very nice pujas, very nice everything, very clean temple. And he was telling me about youth programs they have in the summer. And I asked him, how is the Indian youth born and raised in America, how are they accepting and appreciating your culture, your religion, and your temple? That's an interesting question. And he said, they're completely different than us. And I'm proud of them. So he explained. He said, I'm Brahmin. And my whole community, he said, from our earliest childhood, we were performing pujas. We learned Sanskrit. We studied scriptures. We performed different pujas and different rituals. And we know how to do all of them. And we had priests doing them for them. And all the samskaras we know. He said, myself, the man's in his mid-50s. He said, myself and everybody I knew. He said, our conception of religion is simply doing the rituals, performing the sacrifices, performing the samskaras. But you want to know something? When our children come to the temples, they don't want anything to do with the rituals or with the pujas or with the yajnas or with the samskaras because they're born and raised in America. But they all ask, why do you do that? And I sat and thought. And all the older people of the whole congregation, we all came together and realized our whole lives, we never asked that question. Why we're doing it all? He said, I think our children who don't do any of it are more advanced to us because they really want to know what it's about. So, ritual is sacred. But why is ritual sacred? Because it is a way to express our love, our devotion, and our eagerness to become purified and sanctified. It's not the ritual itself that helps us. It's the intention, the motivation in which we offer our rituals. So Sankirtan, the congregational chanting of the holy name, it's a ritual. We're chanting God's name, and that's wonderful. But unless we're guarding against the 10 offenses, we have the proper disposition of why we're chanting and how to live a life to accommodate accessing God's mercy, then our benefits are very minimal. So we come together for this reason. We want to develop the eagerness and the attraction to love Krishna. To hear about. If you love someone, you want to hear about them. You want to speak about them. Yes? In the world today, people are very eager to tell, I have done this. But when we come together, we like to hear about and speak about, Krishna has done this. The great saints have done this. And all of our hearts melt in happiness to hear it. Today there's a beautiful darshan of Krishna and Balaram. Should I tell one story about Krishna and Balaram? Because that's what this verse is talking about. We should tell stories about Krishna and Balaram. And together we take pleasure in the same thing, And that same thing is God, who is the unifying factor of everyone. It brings our hearts together. Machchitta madgata prana bodhyanta parasparam katyantaschamam nityantushyanti charamanticha. Because Krishna is the common harmonious object of all of our lives, when we together take pleasure in hearing and chanting His glories, it not only awakens our love for Krishna, it awakens our love for each other. That taking of pleasure is very important. We should take pleasure. Krishna wants us to take pleasure in hearing His glant and chanting His glories. Together, sharing that. One day, Krishna and Balaram entered into the beautiful forests of Vrindavan. It was then the summer season. Generally, in this part of the world especially, the summer season is not very nice. It's not at all pleasing. I remember I was talking to my dear godbrother, Brahmananda Prabhu. This was about 25 years ago. He just came from a place in Africa where it was really hot. And I was in the mountains of America. And there was a bitter cold winter with deep snow and ice and clouds. And the summer had just come, and there was the sun appeared. And I said to Brahmananda, I said, isn't it so? In other words, it was a little bit warm. After freezing cold, and we didn't have any heat or proper clothing or anything, freezing for 6 months, the sun is out, and it's becoming warm. And I said, Brahmananda Prabhu, I said, the sun is out, isn't it feel nice? And he looked at me very grave. He said, where I live, the sun is our enemy. It's oppressive, it tortures us, it just drains us. So that's kind of the way it is in India. Now many of you, you have air-conditioned cars, and you have air-conditioned homes, and you have air-conditioned offices, and fans. And you're not so happy just going out into the sun in the summer. Well, in Vrindavan, there was no air conditioners, there was no fans, there was no air coolers. Krishna and Balaram just went right out into the pasture grounds. But it describes by Shukadev Goswami that in Vrindavan, the summer was so very pleasing. Because not only all the people, but everything was animated with loving devotion for the pleasure of Krishna. There was so many very sweet waterfalls flowing. And the sound of the waterfalls was so pleasing to the ears. In fact, the waterfall sound was echoing in such a way that it covered the sound of the crickets. Now we're talking about insects now. It's covered the sound of the crickets. So sweet. And the bees were buzzing. And from the waterfalls there was mists of sprinkling drops that was carried in the air to just create a cooling effect. And there were breezes coming from the river Yamuna and the very sweet watered lakes. And those breezes were very cool. They were carrying the fragrant pollen of the lotus flowers. And the trees, they were so much nourished by the sprinkling of the waterfalls that all of their leaves were fresh and they were green. And therefore they were giving shade everywhere. And the sun wasn't hot. The sun was pleasing. And Yamuna, in the celebration of Krishna, was splashing from her banks and watering all the green grasses and all the pasture grounds. And all the various types of flowers of all seasons were blooming. That is Vrindavan. Krishna and Balaram entered into this beautiful forest in the summer season and played so many nice games together. They would play games where one boy would put his hands from behind on the other boy's eyes and guess who I am without saying anything. The idea is you had to guess who the other boy was. And if you can guess who he was, then you win. Very nice game. And they would get fruits, the bale fruits, the amalaka fruit, and they'd throw the fruit high in the air. Then they'd take other fruits and try to hit that fruit. And they would wrestle, and they would jump, and they would imitate the animals. They'd see a peacock. One boy would say, Krishna, can you teach this peacock how to dance? And Krishna said, yes, I will teach the peacock how to dance. And he would start dancing, more beautiful than the peacocks. And all the boys would be so happy as Krishna was dancing. They would clap their hands and they would play their flutes and they would play their cymbals. And they would, so, and well done, Krishna, well done. And even the peacocks were so happy that they would come and offer him their feathers as dakshina for being their dancing guru. And then Krishna and Balaram would tell the boys, now you dance. And the boys would dance so many beautiful cowherd boy dance. Not like Bharatanatyam or anything. This is very simple dance of the cowherd boys. And they'd be dancing and Krishna and Balaram would be sitting playing flutes and playing instruments. And celebrating. They would be praising one another. Sometimes they'd see a frog. And the frog would be jumping and all the boys would start jumping just like the frog. And the frog would jump in the water. The boys would jump in the water. And this way they were spending their day so happily. Just playing. And what was the nature of that play? Everyone simply wanted Krishna to be happy. One boy would say, I will touch Krishna first. And, no, no, I will touch Krishna. No, no, I will touch Krishna. They were all running to Krishna. And by Krishna's grace, everyone thought that they touched Krishna first. They're trying to please Krishna, and Krishna's reciprocating by giving ultimate pleasure to his friends. That is bhakti. So one day, the most dangerous of all asuras came for the purpose of kidnapping and killing Krishna and Balaram. Are you ready? This is a very serious story. And its purport is very relevant and pertinent to our own lives. This demon's name was Pralamba. And he was so wicked. He wanted to kidnap and kill Krishna and Balaram. And if you kill Krishna and Balaram, who's the love and the life of all the Brijabasis, then everyone dies. Yes? So what he did is by his deceiving mystic powers, he disguised himself as a cowherd boy. Not a strange foreign cowherd boy that's just coming in. He was so thorough in his research, so intelligent. He was just examining. And he saw one particular cowherd boy did not come to the pastures that day because he had to perform some duties for his family. So Pralamba, by his mystic potencies, took the exact form of that gopa. In other words, he came in the guise of Krishna and Balaram's best friend. Why? Because if someone puts their trust in you, you can do the most benefit for that person, but you can also do the greatest harm to that person. We were discussing this morning, the nature of trust. A person can really help you to the maximum if you have trust in them. But on the contrary, a person you put your trust in can cheat you greater than anyone else. Yes? In America, such people are called con men. But in America, you can't say con men anymore, because men and women want equal rights, so there's con women also. Con men, con women, con people, whatever. That means somebody who's simply duplicitous. They appear in one way, but they want something else. They appear as your friend and well-wisher, but actually they want something from you for themselves, with no consideration of what damage it does to you. Yes? So their psychology is somehow or other, whatever it takes to get that person to trust you. Yes? I knew a man, his profession was selling used cars. This is in the United States. And he told me, he says, you know, when we're trained to sell used cars, when a person comes in, we have to just present ourselves. We have to look, dress, act, sit, walk. Everything, all of our emotions are to get people's trust. That I'm your friend. I'm that long-lost friend that you've been longing to meet all your life. Here I am. You have to actually have that impression on someone. And then they trust you. And the more they trust you, you show them the worst possible car and give them the highest price. Because then you make the most profit and they trust you. They'd never buy that car if they didn't trust you. Right? Because they trust you. They'll say, oh, this is good. It runs very nice. It's used. But, you know, it's better than new. Oh, really? Better than... Yes, trust me. Oh, I trust you. It's better than... And then you sign the contract and you give him the money and he makes big commission and you suffer, Haribo. That's selling technique. A good salesman is a person who gets the trust of the customer. We were speaking previously. One of my friends, he really trusted someone, and therefore years and years and years of his work he gave to that person to invest for him and lost everything. Well over $1 million. The person's in poverty. He has nothing practically. Because he trusted someone. Now some people, if you trust someone, but they're egoistic, they have their own motivations, they can cheat you. And they can cheat you and hurt you more than anyone. Or some people you trust, like this person I'm talking about, the person actually wanted to help, but he invested his money in the wrong place and lost it all. So he's crying. I wanted to help you, but I've ruined your life. What can I do? I don't have anything to pay you back. And take you to court. So if you put your trust in someone who has good intentions but can't help you, you can get hurt. If you put in trust in somebody who has their own selfish motivations, oh, how they can cheat you. They can take everything from you. That is why in today's world, people have a hard time really trusting someone else. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said it is a world of cheaters and cheated. It's hard to put trust, real trust. Prabhupada said, if you just trust that I have not come here to cheat you, you'll become perfect. Because you'll open your heart to accept. So you can do the most damage when your ill motives are in disguise as being a well-wisher. So this was Pralambasura's psychology. I'll come in the guise with the same personality as Krishna's, one of his best friends, and then he'll trust me, and then when he puts his trust in me, I could cause havoc. Harivo. Now Krishna, Vedaham Samatitani Varatamanani Chaujuna Bhavashani Chabutani Mam Tu Bedana Kashtana. He knows everything. Harivo, past, present, future. He knows everyone. He's within our heart. You can't cheat Krishna. That was Pralambasura's defect. He thought that he could cheat Krishna. He thought he could disguise his real will from what he was presenting. We can do that for some people. It's called hypocrisy, duplicity. Where I try to make myself look like a very pious, saintly person, but behind the scenes, I'm doing nefarious activities. Yes, and this is so many times this happens in world history, even in religious history, where people put on the robes and the disposition and speak with the words of a saint, and people give their lives and they give their money and they give so much, but behind the scenes, doing all illicit activities, cheating. And in the end, those persons who put faith are devastated. It's a big responsibility. When someone trusts you, you have such a serious responsibility to have the integrity that will actually benefit that person forever. So Pralambasura came in this role of a friend with the intention to kill. Krishna knows everything. Because Krishna doesn't see from the outside in. He sees from the inside out.
Harivo.
Because he's within our heart. You're seeing Gopinath from the outside, but you know where Gopinath's seeing you from? His eyes are looking right into the core of your heart to see your intentions and your motivations and your aspirations. That's what he sees. He doesn't just see that you're saying pranams, Bhagavan. He's saying, what is his intention? What is his motivation? What is his purpose? What is his desire? That is Krishna. So Krishna knew who is this Pralambasura. But Krishna likes to make his pastimes very fascinating. Otherwise, we would have nothing to talk about. If Krishna just acted like everybody else, I mean, you'd all be sleeping by now if I'm telling about his leelas. If I say Krishna went to work at 9 o'clock and got caught in a traffic jam. Krishna appears on this earth to attract our hearts, so he does incredible things. Now people say, how could God do that? In today's drama, person said, I can teach you to lift up so many weights and so many ladies will go, ooh. And he says, wow, well, my God, Krishna, he lifted Govardhan Hill with the little finger of his left hand for 7 days when he was only 7 years old. And he goes, so Krishna does these things to attract our hearts. What is it that God cannot do? If he could create the sun and the moon and all the planets and the gravitational forces, and he's created all species of life, he's performing miracles at every moment, Krishna could do anything. And when he personally appears in the world, he performs such wonderful activities just to attract our hearts. So Krishna, he was playing along with Pralambasura. Here's a demon who has come in such a duplicitous
and wicked way that he's disguised himself as one of my best friends just to destroy me. So Krishna said, oh, my dear friend, you have come. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Yeah. Today we'll have nice fun. Then Krishna said, hey, cowherd boys, oh, gopas, let us play a game today. The game will be that we'll pair off in two teams. And all the cowherd boys, they elected the two captains of the teams. Yes? One team was Balaram captain, and the other team captain was Krishna. So each of the teams would pair off into individuals. And one boy would hide. And if the other boy could find the boy that hid, then the boy that hid, that was found, would have to show that he lost by carrying the winning boy who found him on his shoulders. It's a nice game, is it not? So all the boys started hiding, and all the other boys were looking for them. If you can't find them, then the person who can't find has to carry the other boy on shoulder. Like that. So many games. And whoever wins is the team that gets the most points. So Balaram's team won the game. So all the members of Krishna's team had to carry the member of Balaram's team on their shoulders and run with them. So Krishna carried Sridhama. And Vrishab was carried by Bhadrasena. And Pralambasura, he got on Krishna's team because he was afraid of Krishna. But he really wanted to, he thought if he could kill Balaram, that would be a good start. So he took Balaram on his shoulders and started running. And all of them went to Bandiravan, one of the 12 forests of Vrindavan. Beautiful, beautiful forest. And Krishna led them all while they were carrying each other on their shoulders. They went to the Bandiraka, or Bandiravat. Very big, beautiful, majestic banyan tree in Bandiravan. This is where they would play so many sports. But Pralambasura just kept running and running and running and running. Haribo! And went deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper into the forest, way, way, way away from everybody else. And Balaram was thinking in his heart, why is my friend taking me so deep in the forest? Where's he going? Bandiravan is there. Everyone else is there. Why? What he? And then he began to understand. Of course, the Lord knows everything, but sometimes he actually, for his lila's sake, just understands. So he became heavy. Balaram, who was just a small cowherd boy, assumed the weight of Mount Sumeru. Pralambasura was having a hard time. So Balaram was thinking, how is it that my friend, he is doing like this? So Pralambasura couldn't restrain himself in this disguised form, and his original form manifested. All of a sudden, he just grew to a huge, immense size. He was up to the clouds. And he had a gigantic, effulgent body. His hair was red, and it looked like the flames of a hungry fire. He had sharp fangs for teeth that looked like dueling swords. His eyes were just bloodshed with anger. He looked like a black cloud, and Balaram was like the full moon in the cloud. And he was holding massive weapons, and he was ornamented with dazzling ankle bracelets and bracelets on his wrists and necklaces and crown. And Balaramji was thinking, how has my little friend changed in every way? And with his small fist, Balaram just hit him on the head. Balaram's like little size, way, way on the top of this demon. He just hit him. And that little hit cracked his head open, blood started pouring, and he fell to the ground. It's a beautiful sight. Now, in this world, you know, we have special effects in movies today. I don't know how Bollywood, but Hollywood, they have all these special effects, and I've heard. I met somebody in Thailand when I was there a couple years ago, and they just came out of a movie theater. And I was talking to them. They were talking to each other. I just happened to be with them in the same car. They came out of a movie theater, and they were talking about how they suffered. They were saying that movie theater was freezing cold. It was freezing cold. And outside it was summer. It was hot. So why did they make the air conditioner so cold? It was so cold. And everyone was suffering because the air conditioner was too high. And I said, then why did you stay? Why didn't you just go? He said, because the special effects were so good. He said, the acting was horrible. There was no good plot, but the special effects were so good. So I said, if you read Srimad Bhagavatam, the ultimate, supreme special effects are there. And you don't have to sit in a freezing theater to see it either. Of course, we're sitting in a burning hot temple room. But we become transcendental. That's what this verse is. When we're immersed in hearing about Krishna, we become transcendental. We don't care about these miseries of material existence. They become superfluous. So when Balaram kills demon like Pralambasura, it's described that it was actually a very beautiful scene to see his head crack open and blood flowing. Now, for you ladies, you're thinking, no, only men like this kind of stuff. But actually, it's not like Kurukshetra. It's when Balaram does it, it's beautiful. Everything he does is simply beautiful. Even the killing of the demons is so pleasing and aesthetically sweet because it's the expression of love. So Balaram, Pralambasura fell to the ground dead. And of course, he attained eternal liberation because he left this world thinking of Lord Balaram. When the Lord does like this, he liberates the soul to Vaikuntha or to the Brahmajyoti, depending on the person's consciousness. And all the friends came running up to Balaram and they embraced him. And they were dancing and singing, Balaram, well done, well done, well done. And they were playing flutes and they were dancing and they were all offering benedictions to Balaram, the gopas. And Krishna was most pleased. And in this way, they returned to the village of Brajapur. Now, the most important thing for us to understand about this story is what it represents to us. The demon Pralambasura represents an anartha within our heart, an unwanted element, which is like a demon. Does any of you remember what Pralambasura represents? Brahmacharis, do you remember? Pralambasura represents lust for the opposite sex and subtle lust, which is a desire for profit, adoration, and distinction. Subtle sex, sense gratification is the desire for reputation and distinction. Pralambasura represents that demoniac element within our hearts. attraction for the opposite sex and attraction for prestige. Kama and pratishta. The two greatest stumbling blocks for an aspiring transcendentalist. That's why Bhagavatam says he's the greatest of the demons. What he represents is very powerful. But like the desire for respect and prestige and the desire to enjoy in various levels the opposite sex, those enjoyments, those desires present themselves as our friend. In our heart, the desire for prestige and reputation does not appear saying, I'm a demon. And this, if you get prestige, I will destroy you in the form of that prestige. Get attached to me, put your trust in me, and I'll destroy you. Balaram got on Pralamba's shoulders. Pralambasura's idea is, if he trusts me, he'll get on my shoulders, and then he's mine. Yes? So these desires, people think that they'll be happy by enjoying with opposite sex. Yes? In America, there's a saying that that's what makes the world go around. And in India, we see it becoming so much more like this. Especially colleges and universities, girlfriends and boyfriends and attractions and showing off and putting your hair nice and wearing special types of cosmetics and combing your hair nicely and having certain tattoos. There's various ways of trying to just look nice to attract. Yes? And in different ages, there's different ways to attract. And we're thinking that this will make me happy. What is that? It's Pralambasura in your heart, disguising himself as your friend. Just serve me. Just do what I... Just play with me. Just play with me and I'll make you so happy. I'm your friend. What are friends for? We should play with each other. We should trust each other. We should respect each other. Let's go. Yes? And in this way, we play with Pralambasura by seeking out respect, adoration, distinction, and gross pleasures. But the only intention is to kidnap Krishna and Balaram from our hearts and kill our propensity to love them and serve them. So we must identify it very seriously. It is described that there are two demons in Vrindavan, described in Srimad Bhagavatam, that Krishna didn't kill, but Balaram killed. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains the reason. Because Krishna is not different than his name. So many of the anartas are demons in our heart. If we just take shelter of the holy name, they will be extinguished. Yes? The Putanas and the Trinabartas and the Sakatasuras and the Batsasuras and the Kaliya and Keshi and Aristasura, Shankatasura, Vyomasura. Just by chanting loudly the holy names. And living in a spirit of hearing and chanting about Krishna, with service to Krishna, will destroy those demons. But there's two demons that require our own effort very seriously. One is Denukasura. Does everyone know the form Denukasura took? Please, everyone together. Thank you very much. Say it louder, please.
Ass!
Yes, yes, yes. He was an ass. Big, big donkey. And he was kicking Balaram because he didn't like Balaram taking his fruits. He wanted to enjoy himself with his friends. Dhenukasura represents ignorance. Gross ignorance that I'm this material body and that I'm the enjoyer, and as the enjoyer, I want to enjoy the fruits of my labor. And even big scholarship. Big scholarship that's based on the foundation of ignorance without understanding our relation to God. All our knowledge is like a burden. We're like asses carrying a burden of so much with the desire to enjoy the fruits of our knowledge and our labor. Yes? And Pralambasura represents that aspiration to enjoy association of women, prestige. These two demons, we have to very, very seriously struggle against. That means we have to cultivate knowledge. We have to cultivate knowledge to understand the difference between the body and the soul. And we have to perform austerities to avoid the gross objects of the senses. And we have to deliberately perform austerities to act and to speak in a humble way to avoid this pratishtha, this prestige. We have to endeavor for it. But it's only possible with the help of Balaram. Balaram is the original spiritual master, and he is represented by the spiritual master. Therefore, we have to seriously study the teachings of the spiritual master to cultivate knowledge, to overcome the donkey of ignorance, Dhenuka, within our hearts. And we have to understand what is right and what is wrong, and how to live in a spirit of servitude. And in the beginning stages of morality and discipline, to live in a disposition of humility. The spiritual master teaches us this, gives us the inspiration. And then with his help, we can conquer Pralambasura. The desire for passion and prestige. And when the spiritual master, Balaram, when we cry out for him to help us in this way, he is Balaram. He takes great pleasure in his spiritual strength. Prabhupada said we must pray to Balaram for spiritual strength to overcome the obstacles that come on our path in this world. And in this spirit, Balaram will bring us to the lotus feet of Krishna, where we could find complete refuge in the ecstatic nectar of the holy name. So let us take this great opportunity that we have to come together in small groups, in large groups, to enlighten one another and transcend the modes of nature by developing a taste together to chant the glories of the Lord and to hear the glories of the Lord. I'm sorry I went way over time, but I haven't been here in 5 months. I'm sure you got good rest over the last 5 months. I'm very grateful to you for your kindness and your patience today. And now we will have Sankirtan, congregational chanting of the holy names. And we won't have Kirtan very long, at least that's the plan.
because there are very important announcements after the kirtan that we request you to please stay for. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.